And I tell everyone, if you really want to be on the active side, you got to have what I call the three C's. You got to have confidence, you got to have credibility, and you have to have connections. That confidence can't be fake. I'm not talking about blind hubris. I'm not
Right.
talking about faking it till you make it. Talk about the confidence that comes from putting in the work.
Financial independence,
freedom,
financial picture,
independent financially,
financial future,
financial freedom and wealth,
financial independence.
Get your fill, financial independence and long life. Welcome to another episode of Get Your Fill, Financial Independence and Long Life, where we explore ways to achieve those two goals. And people who've done it, come on and help us, like John Kasman. John is a real estate entrepreneur. We love talking to real estate entrepreneurs. He has partnered and partners with busy professionals to invest over $100 million worth of apartments. John also consults active multifamily investors to help them start or grow their business. John hosts the Multifamily Insights podcast, and he's the co-creator of the Midwest Real Estate Networking Summit. John, I want to hear all about this. How did you get? So first of all, John, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Christine. I'm excited to be here today and to talk to you and jump into things.
Absolutely. And just from the conversation that we've been having, I feel like everything you have to say is going to be of particular interest to the audience, because you weren't always a real estate investor, right? You're not one of these like 20 somethings that just said, oh, you know what? I don't need a real job. I'm just going to go fix and flip and buy all this stuff and then make my million.
Yeah, definitely not my story. Definitely not my story. Like many of your listeners, I was in corporate America. I worked a W-2 job, did it, you know, the way they tell you to do it, right? You want to live the American dream. You go to college, you get a degree, you get a good paying job. You work that until, you know, 30 years or so until they kick you out and you get your gold watch, you retire and you ride off into the sunset. that was the dream that I bought into. And quite frankly, I was the first person in my family to go to college. So I was looking for clues of how do you succeed? How do you break through? How do you get the things that you want? And that was the pathway, right? Everything you read, the people you talked to, that's what I saw. So I was on that journey. I was in corporate America and a couple things happened. One, and this may be relevant for a lot of your listeners, I stumbled across that little purple book, right? Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And that really helped illustrate why, you know, when I was a child and growing up, we didn't have money. My dad worked really hard. He could pay the bills, that kind of stuff. But there certainly wasn't an abundance mindset in that household, you know? So that was one thing that really just helped me understand, like, oh, this is how money works. It's not just about, you know, making money to pay bills. There's actually this thing called assets and investments. And okay, now I'm starting to comprehend what I'm really trying to strive for. The second thing is my first like real job. So I had a, you know, I was working in the industry, but then I got a job with General Motors. So I'm on the client side. I'm working in advertising and marketing. And I did that for 15 years. But earlier in my career, I was at GM and I was there when we went through bankruptcy. So, you know, 2007, 2008, 2009, I'm at GM, we're going through bankruptcy, and my career is, in my mind, over before it even started. And I just kept thinking about, well, what are you going to do? Now, the great thing for me, if you could say it this way, is I didn't have kids, I didn't have a wife, I didn't have anything like that at the time. So I could spend a lot of time reflecting on what I wanted, but I thought about my peers and my colleagues and those who had those obligations, and I realized that I never wanted to be in that situation. So putting that together, that turned me into real estate. I said, all right, you know what? Real estate, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I remember reading that. You know, I think everyone can invest in real estate. There are so many different strategies to invest in real estate. I just had to figure out which strategy worked for me. And I set out to do that. And we started with a small portfolio and eventually scaled, which we can talk about in a second here. But that was really the trigger for me, was being at a company and seeing that this job, this career that I worked so hard for, was actually not very secure at all.
Yeah, it's true. They think, oh, you're going to work for this big company and everything's going to be great. But actually, whenever your money is controlled by someone else, you're controlled by someone else, right? Your destiny is controlled by who's ever holding the purse strings. And if that ain't you.
Yeah. And I remember too, like, it's crazy because there was a magazine article, I want to say it was like Time or Newsweek, but on the cover, they had Too Big to Fail, right? And it was all about, you know, GM, and then at that same time you had Lehman Brothers and the financial institutions that were going bankrupt as well. And again, that was unfathomable for a lot of people. So for me, it really was a matter to say we have to kind of rethink that. And you see the younger generations now, they're coming into the workforce with this mentality. They know they want to job hop, nothing secure. But I think my generation was right at that cusp of that transition to say, hey, my dad worked for two companies for 30 some years. He filled out a resume once, right? So that's just not, how we were raised, right? It's like you get a good job and you stay there until they kick you out the door. And it wasn't really my mentality, but I think again, that experience really catapulted me and kind of reinforced this notion of you've got to create your own path.
Well, not to like digress too much, but we didn't question it, right? I mean, how many we I didn't know any entrepreneurs, right? I mean, my dad, if you could call him an entrepreneur, he was a bricklayer, and at one point he had his own business, but that's I mean, I guess if he would have stuck with it, maybe it would have been an opportunity for him to not work and still make money. But for the most part, it was you, if you want money, you have to go out and work for it. There's not going to be like some tenant, paying you your rent or paying you money every month. That wasn't, I don't know, maybe I lived in too small of a town, but we didn't have any of those people.
No, and I was fortunate enough to grow up around a lot of different people, and I was a very observant young person. So I was always kind of curious, like, oh, what does that person do, or how do they make money? And like I said, the easiest thread I could see is most of the people who had money or who were quote unquote successful, they went to college and got a good job, right? There were some people who had businesses, but I don't even think we would consider them as businesses. It was more like a hustle, right? They were like, they had something they did to make money, but it wasn't like a corporation that they ran, and it wasn't that kind of thing. It was just more of a, oh, this person runs this business, or they have that, whatever thing that they do. So you're right. I think that exposure is so key. And again, now we've got the internet, we've got podcasts like this, we have YouTube. So there's so much more access where I think for most people, it really comes down to figuring out what your strategy needs to be based on your, financial situation, your time commitment, your real goals. And once you figure that out, well, now you have the pathway to create, not just wealth from a monetary standpoint, but wealth from, time, wealth from location, all the different things that you want to have in your life.
Yeah, true freedom. So, John, did you just like, were you pretty much successful right away when you got started with real estate investing?
Yes and no. So, again, keep in mind, this is 2008, 2009 when this trigger kind of happened for me. So I was in Detroit. Everyone I knew who had real estate in Detroit was if you talk to them, they were like, hey, you want to buy it? And I was like, no. So, I mean, it was fire sale, right? I mean, if you recall, at the time they were giving away properties for like a dollar, literally $1. You just had to pay the taxes. They would give you the property. In hindsight, man, what a great deal. That would have been awesome to take that and buy as much as you could get. But for me, I had never invested in real estate. So all I could say is, wow, if it's that bad where they're giving it away, this must be a terrible investment. I'm not buying anything here, right? And because of the automotive industry, and it was, that city was so reliant on the automotive industry, I just knew from everything I was reading that I didn't want to invest in a market where everything was driven by one industry. So I ended up moving to Chicago. And once I moved to Chicago, part of that logic was I was switching out of automotive, moving more into advertising, which is kind of what I wanted to do. But then, too, I was going to start investing. And sure enough, about a year later, I bought a two-unit building with my wife. From there, we started to scale our portfolio. And all those early deals were amazing. They did crush it. I mean,
It's hard to go wrong in those days.
oh my good. Well, hindsight, I know that, but 2012, I bought a two unit. We got it for like 360 some thousand. We put like 50K into it. About a year and a half later, I didn't think we created much equity, but we were ready to buy our next investment property. And our agent was like asking us questions about the one we bought. We had already owned. And she was like, I think you got a lot of equity in that. I'm like, no, I don't think so. Maybe the 50K we put into it, but no, we don't think so. She's like, no, I think you got a lot of equity. So she kept pushing us to go talk to her lender. So finally, we had a conversation, and they came back and gave us kind of a report of the value. And I was driving when it came through, and my wife called me, and I remember her telling me the number. I had to pull to the side of the road. I was like, You've got to be effing kidding me. Like, I was shocked. And in short, we had to create over $100,000 of equity beyond what we put into the property. And I wasn't even, I don't even think I was making 100,000 at that time annually. So for me, the light bulb definitely went. I was like, oh, you can make this kind of money in real estate? And I was on a two unit that I lived in one of the units, right? So this was, I was just like, whoa, okay. So my, the mind started working and we had great success on those early deals. As you alluded to, you couldn't really go wrong in 2012. I mean, you could throw a rock, at a map and grab a piece of, any property, and you probably did well back then. But the good thing for me was I was refining it. I knew, I was aware enough that, hey, there's a reason you did well. Let's try to replicate that. So I spent a lot of time and energy trying to learn, okay, this worked, but why did it work? One of the things that worked really well for me is I was really, really particular about where we were going to invest. There are 77 distinct neighborhoods in the city of Chicago, and I did a lot of research, and only one neighborhood out of the 77 did not lose any value during the economic downturn. So as we were looking to buy in 2012, I said, you know what? If I don't know anything else about Chicago real estate, I know this one neighborhood, the home prices did not go down. That's as stable gets. Like, forget everything else. We are only looking in this neighborhood. So that was part of it. Now, again, as I grew as an investor, I had to learn, but why? Okay, well, why did this not go down? What are the features that we can replicate? How do I get better cash flow moving forward? And that allowed us to kind of grow and scale as an investor. And I would say too, we hit a not a wall, but as we continued to expand, those deals were not as great, and we struggled, and we got into flipping, and I lost money on flip. So I had to really step back and say, what is the right strategy for me, based on my situation? It's the same question I ask other investors, because again, we were doing something that worked. We try to pivot to other strategies to scale and really escalate kind of the velocity of money, and those things really backfired, where I ended up in the hole from where I started on those flip projects.
Yeah, flipping is, I feel like people underestimate. They all think, oh, fix and flip. Yeah, no problem. I'm just going to, fluff and buff. I'm just going to go in here and put a coat of paint on everything and it's going to be magic. And it's like, yeah, when it's 2008, it is magic because you didn't even have to paint it. You could just like, whatever, put up a mailbox and all of a sudden you've got extra money. So it's not as easy, and you have to factor in the taxes, which I think a lot of people like to forget about until tax time comes. You're like, oh, what do you mean? I could pay short-term capital gains tax on this property. Like, wow, that really stinks. Yeah, it does. So I think you've got to really have your, I think flipping actually in a normal market and a normal economy is one of the harder ways to make money in real estate.
Yeah, I think too, there's the taxes, there's what's the business plan for it, but there's also a very small window for error. And I think that was really our issue. We did a good job finding the property. The renovation had its own issues, but the biggest problem was that window. When you go into a flip project, every day you hold that property, those holding costs go up and your profits go down. So that's really what derailed our project, and we had a high interest rate on our loan, and it just kind of crumbled from there. I think conversely, when you look at buy and hold strategies, whether it's rentals or multifamily, well, the value of that property only matters on 2 days: the day you buy it and the day you sell it. And because you're holding this property, you can control the day you sell it, right? It's cash flowing. There's money coming in. The problem with my flip project was, every day I was losing money. I was literally putting my money into the deal to get it done, and there was no money coming back to balance that. So I was taking my paycheck and put into this deal, getting the contractors to hurry up and finish so I could put it on the market, get it on MLS, and hope somebody's gonna buy this thing, right? But every day I'm growing more and more nervous because I'm losing more and more money. Whereas again, with multifamily or buy and holds, you have that money coming through. You've got the rents. Now, yes, you might have some down months. You may have a tenant that move out, whatever the case is. But that path to cash flow, it's much cleaner, much easier. And now you can really run it like a business and control that exit, as opposed to, run it as a hustle or a hobby where you have to really, be on point for that little window.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you can't potentially do almost everything yourself, then flips are a crapshoot because you don't know. Like if something happens, your plumber breaks his arm or whatever, then you're like, oh, crap, now
Yeah.
what?
And to your point, at a minimum, to at least to be on site. I mean, the one of the biggest reasons my flips were not successful is flipping really requires hands-on management. It is blue collar, right? You would not expect to own or run a fast food restaurant and just expect everyone to come, all the employees to show up, do everything exactly how they're supposed to do. No one's going to leave early. No one's going to cut corners, right? These are young people. Like they're going to cut corners if they can. They're going to leave. And it's not, I'm not saying it disparagingly. And what I'm saying is there's an expectation of management and the role of management given certain roles. I came from kind of white collar corporate America, where if we sat down and had a meeting and we talked about the plan to paint this unit, and to get it done by Tuesday, I walk out of the room. I don't have to talk to you, because if it's not going to be done based on Tuesday and based on our conversation, you need to be calling me or you're not going to be employed after that, right? That's just, it's simple. That's how business operates. That's not how it works with flipping. I mean, you show up on Tuesday and it's like, there's not even paint here. It's like, so you got to stay on top of those guys. Hey, where we at? What's going on? Oh, well, like you said, guy broke his arm. All right, well, who else we got? Like, go get this guy. Like, go get this. Oh, I don't have the money for the paint. Okay. So you're constantly on top of it because you've got a problem solve. And I was just very different. And I had a full-time job. So one little piece of, feedback for investors, if you're trying to figure out your path, you have to understand how much time you have to commit to this. If you have a full-time job, if you have kids, if you have other obligations, do not select an investment vehicle that requires a lot of your time and energy, because it's very, even if you're successful, it's very easy to get burned out, and it's gonna be really hard to scale. Like I know doctors who are, they want to flip, and it's like, why? Why would you want to take on this part-time job when you already have a full-time career? What you really want to do is put your money to work so that you can, do what you do on your day job. When you have free time, take it, spend it with your family, go golfing, go fishing, go hiking, go do whatever it is you want to do, but put your money to work. And so many people, they hesitate to pay someone because they feel like, well, I can do that. And it's like, well, then you picked the wrong investment vehicle, right? Like, you shouldn't be signing up for a part-time job when you already make six figures. That is not what anyone writes down on their goal list is, hey, I'm making good money. I need another job. Let's do that. Let's get more jobs.
Right. I just want to work more. That's my big goal. I just want to have less free time. Yeah, no thanks.
It's crazy. And if people don't think about it that way, and I will, I mean, I mentioned to you before, but I didn't think about it that way because investors don't talk that way, right? We talk about an investment as it's an investment, but it's not. It's only an investment if your money is working. If you're working, it's a job, okay?
Right.
So if you're at the property, you're fixing stuff, you're painting, you got a job. Now, you might be the boss, but it's a job. So if you think about it that way, well, maybe those investments don't look as sexy. Yes, you can invest and get a 20% return if you're doing the work, but are you factoring the amount of hours you spend? What are you paying yourself? $7 an hour, $10 an hour? I know
If
you're
you're
not
lucky,
physically
right?
paying it, but that 20% return doesn't really look like 20% if you had to pay yourself. And if you factor that into your analysis, you will probably never invest, at least not in these kind of deals. So for me, that aha really came when I had a three-unit deal. I got a quote from these painters to paint the unit on a unit turn. It was like $800. I refused to pay that amount of money. I said, I'll do it myself. And I had a full-time job. We just had our first son, and it was summer. So he was maybe like 3 or 4 months old. And I went there bright and early, got all my materials, and started painting. And I painted really, I'm a good painter. I spackled, I filled the holes, I sanded, I primed, I prepped, first coat of paint. Like, listen, I was there for like 8 hours. My family's at the park on a Saturday, one of the few days off I get. My family's at the park. I'm here literally watching paint dry. And I'm sitting here like, I don't think this is really investing. This is not what I drew up, right? If you think about it, like the reason I started investing was to have more financial freedom. time independence, location independence. And here I am sitting in this hot, empty apartment because I was too cheap to pay somebody to paint it, and I thought the value wasn't there. And I really just, and it wasn't until I FaceTimed and I saw, you know, my, I'm like, damn, they look like they're having fun, and I'm waiting on the second coat. It's like, okay, I'm not doing this the right way. And I think that's important just because, again, oftentimes we start a journey for a reason, and we wake up one day along that path and we have no idea how we got here. Even if this is your job, right? It's like, wait a minute, why am I in this role? What, how did I get here? And you could very easily do that with real estate. You could wake up one day and you've got 10 houses and yeah, it sounds great. You're getting cash flow. But if you're spending all your hours, you know, dealing with, you know, tenants, toilets, termites, and issues, was it worth it? You know, like, can you hire a manager? Can you step back? Can you figure out how to actually scale your business? And one thing we do is we actually buy larger apartment buildings and we work with other investors who want to get the benefits of investing in real estate, but they don't want the headaches of actually owning it and being the manager. And that's been our sweet spot, is partnering with other people, pulling that money together and going out there and buying larger assets where we can put in professional management companies. We can oversee them. We can run it like a business. And that allows me to tap into my background, right, in corporate America. I oversaw, you know, seven agency partners. I oversaw $100 million advertising budget. So these are the skills that I was able to build over time versus painting. You know, painting was not a skill that I developed over time, you know, but this is something I could do, managing teams, managing projects, so that actually allowed us to grow and scale and help more people who wanted to get the perks of being a real estate investor without the headaches of being a manager or a landlord.
Well, and as you said, that's the key, is to discover what's my superpower, right? What am I really good at it? And you might not think that those skills apply to real estate, but as you've proven, they do, right? You don't think, well, I was in advertising. What does that got to do with real estate? Well, actually, quite a lot if you do it right, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the key. You know, I think every professional background applies to real estate. Attorneys, you know,
Well, certainly like accounting and that all number crunching
accounting,
type
all the
people, yeah,
business stuff. If you're
budgeting.
in any kind of business, maybe not medical as much, but business, those kind of things, they absolutely fit because a lot of it is project management, it's financials. You talk about advertising. Well, guess what? We've got to get people to see the value of the product. So that's writing, you know, ad copy. That's going to be marketing the available units. It's figuring out the right finishes to put in the unit. What, you know, where are you buying? Doing market research, which again, people don't think of marketing, but you know, where do we invest? You know, why do we want to invest in this city or this side of the street versus that side? Well, that's market research. You've got to be able to understand how to gather data, go through the data, and make the right decisions based on that information. So you're absolutely right. Like, a lot of those skills on the surface, I was like, well, to be a real estate investor, you probably need like a construction background or you need to work for a property management company. And I knew I didn't have that skill. But once I realized it's really a business, and because I had worked in advertising, working on all sorts of different businesses from, you know, cars to soda to, you know, hair care products, so it's just another business. I've got to break down, what does this business serve? You know, what's the product? What's the service? You know, who's the competition? What are people looking for? What are their pain points? And once you start to understand it from that perspective, then those skills start to come to the table and you can add value to any team or any deal.
Absolutely. So, John, how does it work when you first start, when an investor or, you know, a wannabe, a potential future investor first contacts you? What's the process that you take them through?
Yeah, so very often we get a phone call or we get an email saying, hey, you know, maybe they heard me on a podcast or they were just doing some research and came across us and they wanted to learn more about real estate investing or passive investing. So the first thing is, I want to understand what your goals are. And you may not have them fully fleshed out, but the reality is, I just want to know, hey, do you want to be active and do your own deals? You want to find the property? You want to renovate them yourself? You want to manage it? Do you want to raise money? Or are you looking to invest along someone who's going to do those things on your behalf? If someone's looking to invest, maybe they have a great job and they want to learn more, but they're not ready to be in the driver's seat just yet, then what they will do is they're going to set up a call with us. We're just going to talk to them, get to know them. And this is a two-way filling out process, right? I want to get to know them a little bit. What's going on? Why are you looking to invest? What's your time horizon? What's your risk tolerance? And I want them to get to know me. You know, they know my background, my experience, you know, how do I communicate? What are the expectations? And then assuming we leave that conversation feeling like we could explore opportunities in the future, we're going to add them to our mailing list. So they're going to be added as a potential investor, and then they're going to receive future communications from us about deals. And one thing I tell everyone is, listen, if you see something, I just want you to get feedback. You know, if you have questions about it, if it's a timing issue, whatever it is, that's fine. We're not doing a hard sale. You know, we've been able to develop a pretty robust investor network, and our job is to serve you. You know, our job is to help you understand what you're looking for. Is this investment going to help you achieve your goals, answer any questions that you have, and go from there? So typically what the process works is someone signs up, they get on a phone call with us, they're added to our list. We send out a deal. They have a chance to vet that deal or that opportunity. And then once they decide to move forward, there's something called a subscription agreement. And if you think about buying shares, we typically don't, you know, fill out our own subscription agreements because you have a brokerage firm that goes out there and does that. But it is, it's a share basically of the company is what someone is buying. So we fill out that paperwork. There's something called a private placement memorandum for all these private deals. And then once that's completed, an investor can fund that investment. Typically, we hold our deals for 5 to 7 years. I would say even from 3 to 7 years, kind of just depends on the actual deal and the business plan. And on those deals, our target is typically to double an investor's money over a 5 or 6 year hold period. Now, again, those aren't guaranteed. There are no guarantees when it comes to investing, but we try to make sure that we structure the deal in a manner that gives our investors kind of the preferential treatment. So we do offer a preferred return, which only all that means is that investors have to get a certain level of return before we, as the sponsor or operators, can participate in the profits. So that kind of gives us a little carrot to make sure we're delivering and performing. And again, if we don't perform, we don't eat, is essentially how it works out. So that gives investors a little bit of comfort when they're working with us and doing business.
Yeah, so they would buy into a particular project. So they know, okay, this is one of the buildings that you're going to be part owner of, and they can't recapture that investment until you all decide to liquidate that asset.
Yeah, that's right. One of the drawbacks is it is an illiquid investment. So, you know, people often ask me, well, what's the difference between investing in one of your deals, which is called a real estate syndication? So, what's the difference between investing in a syndication and maybe investing in a REIT, right? A real estate investment trust. Well, a REIT is really a pool of investments that you really don't have access to. You don't really get a chance to review it and say, hey, I don't like this asset class. It's just the pool is set up. You also don't get the same tax benefits because that's taken at the REIT level. So as an investor, maybe one of the reasons you're looking to invest is you want to reduce your tax liability. I know that's very attractive for many high income earners. So with our deals, you are a direct owner of the property, but you don't have the liability of being a direct owner. In the same way, you know, we get to participate with in Apple shares or Tesla shares, whatever companies you like. We get the profits, we get the dividends, you get all those things. But if they make a mistake or if something bad happens, you're not on the hook, right? That's Tim Cook, that's, you know, Elon, that those are the individuals who are personally responsible for anything that happens. So in our deals, those investors are a limited partner, which means their exposure is limited to their actual investment. Anything else is on us as a general partnership team because we are the ones making the decisions. We are the ones operating that deal.
Absolutely. So is this a type of investment that I could use a self-directed IRA to get invested in this kind of thing?
That's a great question. You can. And it's one of the things that I think is so important for people is to understand how much access to capital they have. This was actually something that I struggled with starting out, right? You might hear me say that and you might say, John, it sounds great, but I don't have the capital right now to invest. But the reality is, most of us do through our old retirement accounts. So the way this works is you can roll over an old 401k account. So if you left the company and you didn't roll those funds over into your new company, if it's just sitting there, you can take those funds, roll them over into a self-directed IRA account. And then you can use those funds to invest in real estate. Now, there are some rules and guidelines where you can't, you know, self-deal. So you can't buy a property you're going to live in or buy a property that you're going to manage and fix up. So you have to, the retirement account is treated as a separate entity. So it can't cross, you know, collateralize with anything you're actually physically leading or doing. So syndications are actually a great option for you because you can put your money to work, you can continue to learn, and then grow and scale. And we talked a lot about, you know, kind of finding your path. This is one of the reasons I like this strategy because, you know, you're kind of limited in what you can do with your IRA anyway. So if you can create a self-direct IRA, invest in real estate or multifamily through that path, you can learn and grow, and then you can take that knowledge and now you can figure out what you actually want to do with maybe your active capital or money sitting in your checking account or your savings account yourself. So a lot of investors that I know, that's how they get started. They'll take funds from their retirement accounts, invest, learn, ask questions, and as they're getting more and more comfortable, then they're going to decide, you know what, I want to do more of this, or you know what, I now feel comfortable to go out there and buy a 4-unit or an 8-unit or whatever it is, right? Because they've had a chance to learn a little bit more about the ins and outs. How do we select markets? How do we manage, you know, a tenant when they don't pay rent? How do we know when it's time to increase rents? How do we know when it's time to offer concessions? So these are things they're getting real time by being a passive investor in our deals, and they have access to me. So I'm obviously going to talk to our investors, and they have a chance to reach out and ask questions. I mean, I just did this morning with one of my investors who was, you know, since he did the deal with me, he's grown and he's acquired over 500 units. So it's great to see that. We have some folks who never want to, you know, deal with a tenant and look at properties or anything, but they wait for an email from us. And we have folks who they're doing this because they really want to be active. They want to scale their own portfolio. And this is a way for them to build the three things that they need. And I tell everyone, if you really want to be on the active side, you got to have what I call the three C's. You got to have confidence, you got to have credibility, and you have to have connections. That confidence can't be fake. I'm not talking about blind hubris. I'm not talking about faking it till you make it. Talk about the confidence that comes from putting in the work. You know, whether you've done the deal or done it yet or not, doesn't matter, but are you preparing yourself? Are you reading? Are you analyzing deals? Are you talking to folks? Are you learning the market? You know, that confidence only comes from putting in the work. So that's the first one. Credibility, tapping into your own experiences. When I was starting out, you talked about, you know, the skills that transfer. I really had to lean on my corporate America experience, you know, and I had to remind myself that you've managed $100 million campaigns before and budgets. You've managed seven agency partners before. You've overseen very complex, challenging things where the public, the mass media, you know, they've seen the work that we've produced. So because of that, I'm like, okay, I think I can manage, you know, this renovation, right? It's less construction and it's more project management, and it's understanding what materials do you need, what do you need to have it by, what, you know what I mean? So now it's a different skill set versus, you know, if I'm thinking about how do you shoot a $2 million advertising campaign? Well, I didn't know I'd do that either, right? But I tapped into the people who did. You know, we got our producers, we got our directors, we got our, you know, so it's the same kind of thing, right? It's managing that process. So that credibility is key there. And you want to build your team, the property managers, your lenders, your brokers, other investing partners, mentors, coaches. And then last is connections. You got to have the relationships with people if you really want to take this business seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. Excellent. Those are really great points, John. I really appreciate. I like your style. I like the way you've brought the analysis in, right? You're not like a cowboy. You're not like going, yeah, and then we just buy all this stuff. And you know, you're really analyzing. And that's what I see in the most successful investors is they understand that there might be a component of luck, but that's not something that you can count on deal after deal after deal. So instead of just hoping to get lucky and find this magic property, you're actually got it to where we've got a system. We do this analysis, we figured it out. So, do you have specific areas in the country that you're focusing on right now?
We do. And I just want to reiterate what you just said. You know, the difference between kind of amateur or hobby investors and professionals is systems and processes. You know, you can go out there and get lucky, you can go out there and try some stuff. But ultimately, if you want to run it like a business, you have to have systems and processes. So to answer your question, yes, we do have areas where we focus. We like two regions, the Midwest. And when I say the Midwest, I mean growing parts of the Midwest. And we also like the Southeast region. So I am based in Cincinnati, Ohio, and we like a 2-hour radius around Cincinnati. We can expand that a little bit to maybe 2.5, 3 hours, but we're looking at Columbus, Indianapolis, Louisville, Kentucky, and Cincinnati as well. And then in the Southeast, we love Atlanta, Georgia. We love the Carolinas. We like Florida. The difference for us in the Southeast region is because we've been able to build such great connections and relationships with people over the years, Instead of us going out there and trying to, find great deals in these markets, we actually partner with other operators. So we have a small select number of people that we work with. If and when they come across a deal, we will kind of take a look at it. We'll underwrite it. We'll decide if it's something that we want to be a part of. And then we can share that opportunity with our investors as well. And that allows us to kind of get some scale and kind of expand beyond our core markets, while also strengthening our relationships and having that diversification in the portfolio.
Excellent. John, this is fantastic. I love all the things that you've shared. I think we're getting to the end of our time here together. Is there anything you wish I would have asked you that I haven't asked you?
I would say, for those folks who are trying to figure out, what they should do next, if you have a couple rentals and trying to figure out the next path in your journey, I would say the first step is really get clear on your goals and make sure your goals are clear and you understand your why. Because I see so many investors, they start doing something, realizing that it doesn't really fit their goal. And a lot of times it actually takes them backwards. I think about me flipping. I never wanted to flip. That was never a part of my goal. The only reason I did it was to generate more income, and it ultimately didn't work out. What would have been a much better path for me is to start investing passively in larger deals. Now, I didn't have a whole lot of money at that time, but I knew I wanted to be in larger real estate deals. I knew I wanted to be in apartments. And even as a passive investor, that would have opened up the path and my confidence, my experience, right, to investing in larger deals. So it would have been more streamlined versus, the path I ended up taking. So think about where you ultimately want to get to. Why do you want to get there? And then find the strategy that makes the most sense. If someone does want to learn more, we have a sample deal on our website. We follow that up with seven questions that you can ask a broker that I think everyone should ask, not a broker, but a syndicator if you want to partner with them. So that's on our website at casmancapital.com. But I think the biggest thing here is just figure out what you want, be honest with yourself. And if you just want the money that comes from real estate, don't take the job part. There are ways to invest without taking a job.
Excellent. That's great. Thank you, John. And you gave your website real quick, but what's the best way? Is that the best way for people to get in touch with you?
Yeah, go to the website. We also have our podcast called Multifamily Insights. So either one of those is great. And that is also available on our website. So the easiest thing is just to go to casmancapital.com.
Thank you so much, John. And thank you, listeners, for listening. I know that you're wheels are spinning right now. Things are turning around. You're like, what do you mean? I've got money sitting in my IRA or some old crappy 401k that I didn't know what to do with. And now I've got this great outlet. I can call John and invest with him. I'd highly definitely do your research, definitely get on his website and check it out. He obviously wants to educate you and help you to become the best investor you can be if, in fact, that's the path that's going to work for you. So check him out and share this episode with a couple people who you think might be ready to make a little money. And be sure to be with us next week because we don't even know what's going to happen next week, but it hopefully be really fun.